It's Monday, July 7th, 2014. Time again for After News with Amos. Talk show record of our African-American community. I'm Amos Brown. Glad to have you here. There's a lot going on, obviously. 3 days until the start of the 44th Indiana Black Expo Summer Celebration starts on Thursday evening with the ecumenical service, 7 o'clock at Light of the World Church. And obviously, one of the themes of that service is going to be what has happened in Indianapolis over the last 3 days. That is the bulk of the focus of this program today. We want to hear from you. Not so much the regulars. Drew, regulars get a minute. Everybody else gets longer today. I want to hear from everybody. We are mourning a decorated officer, a legitimately decorated officer of our Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department. Medal of Bravery, got a letter of commendation because he went towards the trouble when that state fair stage collapsed a couple of years ago. Talking about Officer Perry Wren. Worked on the east side, wanted to be on the east side of the city. He was in the North District, but he hung in the east side, east and north districts. Was responding to a call of shots fired. And you never know whether that was somebody, you know, it could have been fireworks. Somebody heard fireworks, called 911, heard shots fired, or somebody throwing a pistol in the air. He and a couple of other officers came on somebody holding not a pistol, not a shotgun, not a rifle, but a gun that is used in combat. It's been used in Vietnam. The Russians used it in Afghanistan. The Afghanis used it in Afghanistan way back when. They still use it today. Our military uses it. Those knuckleheads in Nigeria use it. In the Middle East. Wherever there are military conflicts, they use this weapon. It's an AK-47 style weapon. Young African American male, 25, was carrying that weapon. Officers asked him, drop the weapon. If he had just done that, Officer Wren would be living with us today. That young man didn't. We're now mourning that police officer. That young man is accused with the crime, and that's possibly a death penalty eligible offense. 24 hours before that, actually, a little more than 24 hours before that, 7 African Americans, 6 males, 1 female, between the ages of 23 and 28, were wounded on Broad Ripple Avenue at 2 o'clock in the morning. By somebody. And nobody has called Crime Stoppers yet at 232 tips. They say there were scores of people out there. Everybody scattered, leaving the wounded there and whoever did the shooting. Police don't even have a clue yet. Then there were 2 other people shot and wounded on the far east side of the city. Media's forgotten about them, Drew. We haven't. Because everybody's life matters. We'll talk more about that in a minute. And we'll also tell you the facts of the accused shooter, what he is and what he is not. We'll tell you a little bit more about those wounded in Broad Ripple, who they were, and more importantly, who they were not. And then we'll talk about what are the facts of what happened this weekend, because it is amazing to me. I got an email from a politician who is all upset and decrying, oh my goodness, oh Lord, what must we do about this weekend? And he has the facts all wrong. I mean, if we're going to have a discussion about violence, let's get the facts straight. We'll also play for you a news story that was on Channel 8 last night that has a lot of Channel 8 viewers upset. Maybe you saw it. Maybe you didn't. We'll show you that. This was the reaction of Major Davis Jr.'s family. That's the family of the accused killer of the police officer. And a lot of Channel 8 viewers didn't like what they heard. And I'm curious what our community thinks, because many of you, you know, some of y'all do watch Channel 8, but many of you didn't. So I want to get your viewpoint. So this community conversation today. And you can get in touch with the conversation several different ways. You can send me an email at praiseindy.com. You can send me a text message at 37890, keyword Amos. Or you can hit me at 239-1310. And I'm going to hold the regulars to very short comments, because I really want to hear from the folk. So if you're concerned about all this, upset, angry, what have you, I want to hear from you. If you haven't called in a while, I want to hear from you. If you've never called in 11 years, I want to hear from you. It's not just a black conversation. I want to hear from everybody. I want to hear from those of you that love the Second Amendment of our Constitution. Drew promises me that he's going to keep me calm, because this is not about getting upset. This is about, one, finding out where everybody's head is at. And it's about moving forward. It's not about blame today, because we're all in mourning. We're in mourning for that officer, his family, his wife of 25 years, I believe. My Lord. We're in mourning for the shooter, because he has three kids. We're in mourning for those wounded in Broad Ripple and on the Far East Side, as well as everybody who's been wounded or killed in this spate of violence this year. I'm going to ask some questions about the gun, because I want to know the history of the gun. I want to know who made it. Where did the factory ship it to be sold the first time? We want the whole... Any other time, what is it? I could watch Law & Order, NCIS, fill out the 500 crime shows on TV. What do they do about the middle of the episode? One of the heroes comes and says, well, here's the facts that we found out about this gun, blah, 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 blah. And the television stations and the Star have done a great job covering this story. But I want to see as much space in the newspaper and on television reporting on the history of that AK-47 type weapon. I want to know, how did it get into our community? How did it get in the hands of that young man? That's one of the big issues. Nobody wants to talk about that. The only place you're supposed to find that particular weapon is on a battlefield, not at 34th and Forest Manor. Or any other residential neighborhood. Anyway, 239-1310. We don't want to hear from as many as possible with as many perspectives on what happened this weekend and where do we go from here. And again, the regulars are being limited to 1 minute, even though I love y'all to death. 1 minute. I got to stopwatch here today, because I really want to hear from as many folks as possible. Let me start today with Reverend Phillips. Reverend, you got 1 minute.
Okay, 1 minute. Okay. Amos, what we need to do is end this serious nonsense, because it don't make no sense, and be respective. If we can grab one person this week, grab one person or maybe two or three, and show them how to be more independent and just be honest with people, quit all the hating, because see, God is wanting to heal this land, but he can't heal it if there's a lot of confusion.
I'm with you, Wendy. You're right, my brother. I appreciate it. Let me go to Brother Kareem. Brother Kareem, you got 1 minute.
Peace to the God goddesses in the hood. Look, Amos, I want to call a meeting with the prosecutor and the chief of police. We need to have a grassroots meeting with them real quick. We need to offset this and stop it. I don't want what's happening in Chicago and Detroit to visit us here in that town. So we need to bring this to an end in the spirit of Julia Carson. We need to have a town hall meeting also with the general community and move on it and quit, because I don't like what's going on, and I see some bloodshed going down in this community. It should be.
All right, let me go to Pierre. Pierre, you got 1 minute.
Afternoon, Ames.
Good afternoon.
My condolences to the IMPD family and Officer Ridd and his family. It's always a sad occasion when an officer of the law is slain. I saw the interview on television, and you know, they put the mic in front of them, so they said what they wanted to say. I think one of them did say that they were sorry for the Redden family, but it was just an unfortunate interview. The other thing is, Amos, I follow police shootings across the country. And IMPD and other police officers, agencies, they're going to have to come up with some different tactics, because our officers are running up into situations where they come with a .40 caliber, and they're running up into situations where the assailant has a long gun. But, and now, having said all of that, we still need the FBI to do their job and to look in these questionable police action killings.
All right.
I think I'm the only one calling for that. Thank
all right.
You.
I appreciate it. And Pierre mentioned the gun. That's why I said earlier, I want to know who made the gun. I want to know the trail of, from the time the gun left the factory, who touched that gun? And how did that gun end up in that young man's hand? Because here's the kicker. The media all talked about his criminal record. Okay. The last arrest that gentleman had was in August of 2010. That's almost 5 years ago. So for 5 years, no arrests. As far as the system was concerned, he was not in trouble with the system. The shooter's only conviction was he was charged with dealing dope and had $800 and what have you. Served almost a year in the county jail before trial, which means they were charging him with a felony and had a high bond. But he ended up being sentenced to time served, because he almost served a year. So he was sentenced to time served, 1 year's probation, community service, and go to Narcotics Anonymous. That was his sentence. Misdemeanor. That was in 08. All of his criminal history was never charged with anything violent, was never charged with having a weapon. That does not excuse what he did Saturday night. Does not excuse it. But all these people saying, he was a hardened criminal, the record does not show that. I got an email from State Senator, what was this guy's name? State Senator, they sent me all kind of stuff here. I had it and I lost it. I will find it. Oh, here we go. Say, State Senator Merritt. Again and again we see repeat gun offenders back on the streets after serving limited jail time. Senator, that may be true in other cases. That's not true this time. You know, so Senator Merritt, get your facts straight before you run off out here. This young man is facing the death penalty. You can't get more ultimate penalty than that. Anyway, 239-1310, 239-1310. Let me go back to the phones, and let me go to Eric. Hi, Eric.
Hey, Amos. I wanted to send my condolences out as well to the officer slain. And there's a rumor running around, and I just want to see if it was true or not. I know that the young man that is accused of doing that crime, his father was killed by the police, I believe, or something. Not killed by the police, but was involved in something with the police years ago or something.
His father did have a criminal record. His father served a couple of years in prison. I can't remember this second what he was convicted of. His father was arrested in 2003. Okay. And in the course of the police making that arrest, the father had a heart attack.
Okay.
And passed away while in police custody.
Was one of the officers that was slain the other day involved in that? Because that's the rumor. I'm just trying to figure out.
He was peripherally involved. And when I say peripherally involved, he did not make the arrest. But he was, when police officers respond to these kind of things, you know, 20, 30 police officers show up.
Okay.
And
that's
then
just awful coincidental.
No,
it's coincidental. It's what I'm getting at is just kind of coincidental. Police, his father's death.
Yeah.
It's all kind of coincidental. Now, the other thing is that I wonder if him being, when he was a young man, you know, a little kid, did he have a kind of grow with a hatred towards police?
I don't know.
I'm just asking this. I'm wondering.
No, I think the family, and Drew has heard the whole interview. I have not, but I think the family in the interview on Channel 8 does speak to that. And you'll hear that in a little bit. Because that interview has got a lot of people upset.
So he should have had a little counseling when that happened back in those days with his dad to maybe make him a better young man.
I agree with that, and I'm gonna broaden that. I think every family that is touched by violence needs counseling. I know the police family, not just the immediate family of Officer Wren, but the men and women of IMPD, they have counseling available to them, particularly the ones who responded Saturday night.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, I hope the facts come out before everybody, like you said, kind of jumps to conclusions. I love watching the news, and I'm a news junkie, but unfortunately, the news sometimes enhances things or glamorizes things that sometimes can.
Let me ask you this: the coverage. Did the coverage leave the impression that the shooter was already a convicted felon?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah,
what I saw, yes.
Yeah, and his only conviction was a misdemeanor.
Yes.
And here's the other...
They're not focusing on that. They're focusing on, you know, like I said, they're not focusing on misdemeanor. They're focusing like he's a felon and like he was, you know, one of these other, you know, individuals that have carried out some crimes or whatever that had crazy records, but like you said, his record isn't as crazy as people think it is.
I have seen killers who had a whole lot worse records than this gentleman. Anyway, I appreciate it. Let me go to Anna at 239-1310. Hi, Anna.
Hi, thank you, Amos, for taking my call.
You're welcome.
And thank you for going and looking into this kid's record to find out that he's not the felon that everybody thinks he is. And also, excuse me, what people fail to realize is this man is laying out here at the point of death. More than likely, he's not going to live because they said when they got to the scene, he was dead and they revived him. They've had his mother on TV, and my heart is heavy because they won't even let the mother in to see this child. And she says, I just know that they won't let me in until they ask me to turn off of the life support. I think it's so unfair. It's such an injustice. I pray for the police, but you know what? I'm praying for the other family too, because everybody in this situation needs prayer. It's not just one family involved. We got two families involved.
And I agree with that. Let me respond on the issue of family visiting a suspect who is in the hospital. Okay, particularly in the detention wing at Eskenazi. Family visits are not allowed. If he was just brought in there for a broken leg, family.
I understand that, but what I'm saying is, Amos, you know what? They can bend that law for whoever they want.
No, to be honest, I understand your emotion, and I may be wrong in this, and we'll just agree to friendly disagree. But the policy is in the detention wing at Eskenazi Hospital, and before that in Wishart Hospital, that it's no different than being in jail. And if, in other words, if the rule in being in the Marion County Jail is the only visitation is via television, via video, and you can't visit the inmate in the cell, the hospital room that they're in, when they were building the hospital, they took me on a tour. I wanted to see what the ward was going to be, where the prisoners would be. I've seen it. And basically those hospital rooms, it's a big hospital room built like a jail with a jail door, with the metal door with that little key thing that goes in it. The inside is just a regular, it's like a regular hospital room with all the electronics and the tubes and all that kind of stuff. But on the outside and the door, it's a jail.
This is just terrible, you know, that this lady won't be able to go in there until her child is dead, and they want her to take their child off of life support. I'm not saying all the family, but just the mother. His father's gone. Now, you know, it's just his mother, and I don't know, you know, maybe that's the way it is, but it's upsetting to think about this and knowing that this child's not going to live and she will never be able to say goodbye to her son.
And I understand, but let's look at it. Let's hope that God's mercy will allow that gentleman to live and will come off the life support. You know, we've already had one tragedy and we've lost one life. We don't need to lose another one.
No, we don't. And I agree with you 100%. And like I said, that's, you know, it's sad. It's a sad situation, but I'm praying for both families and I'm definitely praying for him and his family.
All right.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're quite welcome. 239-1310. 239-1310. We're getting your reaction to the events of the weekend and we're kind of setting some of the record straight just cause it was on TV, just cause it was in the Indianapolis Star, doesn't make all of it 100% correct and accurate. When we come back, I'm going to tell you the thing. We'll play the interview from Channel 8 and get your reaction to that. A little bit later, I will tell you what I learned about rifles in Indiana. Y'all going to be shocked when I tell you this. It's Afternoon News with Amos after these. Uh-oh, Marvin Gaye. Make me want to holler. Yeah, this stuff does make you want to holler. Let me go back to the phones. 239-1310, getting your community's reaction to the events, the violence of the last few days here in Indianapolis. Let me go to Anonymous. Hi there.
Hey, Amos, how you doing?
I'm fine, sir.
Hey, first of all, I wanted to say that I am in support of the Second Amendment right. However, guns like this don't need to be on the street. I don't think that's what the Second Amendment was all about. Guns like that, like you said earlier, perfect point. Those guns are made for war and battle, not for home protection or to protect yourself. Secondly, I think to me it doesn't really matter what the gentleman's past criminal history was. The fact that whatever led to that event that night should have been prevented some way somehow. I'm not smart enough to figure that out. There's not many smart people out there to be able to figure that out at this point because it hasn't happened yet. But something's got to change in our city so that we don't have these instances of gun violence. And but I think it's a tragic situation for everyone involved, both sides, both families. You have an officer that's out there doing his job, and because of that, he loses his life. And then, you know, along with that, you have a family that has to, or that doesn't necessarily have to, but they have to defend, you know, their side, so to speak. And I guess that's why, you know, the Channel 8 news report maybe hit some people the wrong way. I'm not sure how I would react if one of my family members did something like that. I would hope that none of my family members would do something like that. But you just you just never know what people are thinking or where their head's at unless you communicate with one another. And I think in our society today, with technology and all the different right. things that you can do on your own, communication, unfortunately, between family members and how you're feeling and how you're thinking doesn't really take place like it should. So,
good points. Yeah. I was stunned this morning. I talked to the folks at IMPD. And I'd already sent them my condolences over the weekend with email, but I talked to them this morning. I was trying to get my facts straight, and made sure that before I talked to everybody today that I understood from their perspective what happened on Saturday night. And then the officer I was talking to just took my breath away when he said, in Indiana, you have to have a permit to carry a handgun, but you don't need a permit to carry a weapon like that young man carried. And I went, and I was like stunned.
Yeah, I mean, that's ridiculous. Something's got to change there. You know, and I'm a lifetime gun permit holder.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what we need to realize is that there needs to be training when you get a permit. You should have to go through some sort of training in order to get that permit, so that you are firearm safe. And guns like that, like I said, they're not for personal protection.
Yeah.
Those guns are to do some damage to multiple people, and they shouldn't be on the street. They should be with our armed forces.
No, and if our officers are coming up at night and the only thing they have is their Glock pistols and they're facing, you know, somebody with an automatic weapon, that's no different than if our guys and ladies are in Afghanistan and they're coming up on the bad guys. Our guys got, they better have as much firepower as the bad guys have.
That's true. That's true.
All right,
I appreciate your program. I may not be the demographic, you know, I'm a middle-aged Caucasian male, but I really like listening to your program. I enjoy all the insight from everyone, and keep up the good work.
All right, I appreciate it. Let me go to D at 239-1310. Hi, D.
Hey, Amos, how you doing?
I'm fine, sir.
Amos, a couple of things. One, I want to send my support and prayers for the officer's family and also for that young man's family, and applaud his mother for boldness and the ability to get in front of a camera during this time. But Amos, I want to read something to you real quick. Richard Hickman, Mark Cruzan, Thomas C. Henry, Karen Freeman Wilson, Alan Kaufman, Dennis Tyler, Hugh Worth, and Peter Buttigieg. You know who these are?
I remember some of them are mayors. They're mayors.
They are all mayors in the state of Indiana that are against having weapons like that in their city. You know whose name is not on there? The great mayor of Indianapolis.
Oh, dear.
I'm a firm believer, as my grandmother would say, put your money where your mouth is at. See, our mouth is on. We need to save these kids. We need to do this, do that. But we're building, we're building a 1,100-plus bed justice center. We're not against illegal guns. And then when these things, so we say, well, we need to save our kids, but all our money goes into perpetuating the things that are going on.
And that's why I really hope that the media in this city focus on, and I asked law enforcement this morning, I said, are y'all looking at was there a serial number on the gun? Was the serial number filed off, erased in some kind of way? I think we need to know the history of this weapon.
Amos, I like Chief Hite. I like him. I think he's trying his very best. But the people who run the city,
mm-hmm.
not the people who police the city, but the people who run the city
yeah.
are putting their monies toward continuing the foolishness that's taking place. Now, one of your callers made a comment, where was his help before this moment? One of the things we've been doing, and I've called you, I've been on your show, right. you know, the city likes to get behind certain people.
Right.
And they don't come to the street level where the people are out there every day doing, but they put their money behind certain people. And we need to be, this is a family issue. That young man lost his father tragically, and nobody ever dealt with that. This is a family issue, and then we'll make this thing bigger than or whatever it is, but it's a family issue. We need to deal with the family issue. So I just want to plug one quick thing that we're fighting for the family this month of July. And this is not in reaction to this shooting. We already had this planned beforehand because we're trying to do some proactive work. And so we have a thing that we're fighting for the families every Friday night, the month of July. And we're just encouraging, we're having kitchen conversation with mothers, dialogues with dads. We got performances for the teens and arts and crafts for the toddlers. So you can bring your whole family to one location and have a great time.
And that location.
And everybody can receive good information.
And that location is?
We're going to be at 5879 Central Avenue, the same place we had the men's conference, where we had the Honorable Wallace Gator Bradley come in and talk to our street-level guys about what growth and development really means, about what united and peace really means. We're going to be at that same place, 5879 Central. I got some callers from your radio show called and asked about it. Matter of fact, I was able to contact, make a connection with one gentleman. But sometimes these people are just talking. If they don't hear their favorite people doing it, they stay at home. But this needs to be a grassroots movement. No cameras, no TVs, no mayors, just black folks saying, we fighting for our own families. We fighting for our own community. United in peace. Their group will be down there doing Black Expo to help police the police that are trying to police our children. We got to stand up for our own community, own family.
And that is 7 to 9 p.m. the next three Fridays, 5879 Central. That's the church up there right on the corner of Central and Westfield Boulevard at the canal.
Yes, sir. 5879 Central. Yes,
all right.
Sir.
Appreciate it, my brother. Thank you. 239-1310. We go to another anonymous, then we'll play you this interview with the family of the alleged shooter, Mark Davis, after this. Let me go. Hi, Anonymous.
How you doing today, sir?
I'm fine, sir.
That's good. The comment I have to make is we have to understand something. I'm not saying what the kid did was right, and I'm not saying what the police officer was a bad police officer. But we have to take in an account of IPD's relationship and IPD's reputation and the way it has been for a while now. We know there's a bunch of cops out here that are out of hand, and I've heard on your radio show many, many times that IPD is out of hand and out of line. So now you have this kid who has seen who has grown up and seen his father die pretty much what he might have considered at the hands of IPD. Mm-hmm. So I guess what I'm saying is, what do you expect? I mean, especially the one thing these news stations don't cover is a lot of these cops go into these neighborhoods and they shake down these dope boys, even though he's not a drug dealer. He might have did some in the past, but at the time he wasn't. But they shake down these dope boys. They take their money and if possible, they'll take their drugs or if there's a prostitute out there and if she don't abide by what he says or she says or whatever, then she's going to jail. So we also have to look at the reputation of IPD and the way IPD handles things, especially in the black community. I think a lot of people outside of the community don't realize that. And as far as the media goes, the media's job is to make the black community to look as bad as possible. So that might be something that everybody want to take under consideration. Like I said, what the kid did, it wasn't right. And I'm not saying that was a bad cop. But what I do seeing, if IPD doesn't get their relationship right with the black community or lesser community or whatever, then you're going to see more of this happen.
All right, my brother, I appreciate it. Thank you. 239-1310, 239-1310. We've talked about a report that Channel 8 did last night that's gotten a lot of reaction from Channel 8 viewers. A lot of you that are listening probably were not watching Channel 8 last night. It was their interview with the family of Major Davis Jr., the accused assailant of Officer Perry Wren. This report begins with the weekend anchors at Channel 8 doing the lead-in into the story.
Tonight, the family of Major Davis Jr., the man accused of killing Officer Wren, is speaking out about the shooting.
His aunt, cousins, and his children's grandmother all spoke to 24-Hour News 8's Jessica Smith this afternoon. She joins us now in the newsroom with their take on last night's tragedy. Yes, the family is still struggling to accept that Davis Jr. could be a part of something like this. He's the father of four children, ranging in age from 2 to 10 years old. Their family has had a long, tense history with Indianapolis police officers.
You don't know what he's been through with IPD. We do. He's scarred for life.
The Davis family's history with police began with Major Davis Sr. He served at least 3 years on a drug conviction and was arrested again in 2003 for public intoxication. He died of a heart attack in police custody when Davis Jr. was just a young teen. The coroner said officers were not at fault, but still, the family holds police responsible.
He wasn't a bad person. His father was killed by IPD. And that is enough to hurt a person and scar him for life.
Remarkably, one of the officers listed in that 2003 police report is Officer Perry Wren.
I imagine he figured they was going to try and kill him. I mean, because look what they did to his father.
On Saturday night, the family says they were having a cookout.
And next thing I just hear ray of shots and everybody running in the house and everybody just hit the floor.
By the time they got outside, they realized those shots were Davis and Officer Wren shooting at each other. Davis had an assault rifle.
Major is not a bad person in spite of what happened. Things happen.
Now the family is worried about Davis Jr.'s reputation.
It's horrible about what took place. But, I mean, I just don't think it's fair for them to keep dragging him through the mud.
And again, questioning police tactics.
You know, I don't know how the police was shooting.
If they took
out any concern about kids running around, I don't know.
There's only one thing this family seems to be sure of.
The boy is not a bad person.
The family said it's sorry for Officer Wren's family, but they think the tragedy could have been avoided if Officer Wren would have stayed in his car, since he could see Davis had a gun. Live in the newsroom, Jessica Smith, 24-hour News 8.
And I understand from Drew that on our regular line at 239-1310 is Marsha Bowers, who is the aunt of Major Davis Jr. Ms. Bowers, how are you? Hello?
I can't say that I'm okay with the situation. The situation now with my nephew, his father is my brother that was killed just about 11 years ago by IPD.
Mm-hmm.
We have now lost both my parents, and I don't appreciate, you had a caller, a couple of callers ago that's spoke something that me and my sister were just discussing last night about how the news media have always will make things look worse for people. When it first aired, they mixed my brother's criminal record with his son. That totally upset at us, severely bad.
Mm-hmm.
My nephew does not have a record like that. He has been harassed by the police just because of his name since he has grown up. It doesn't justify of, hello?
Yeah, I'm right here. I'm listening.
It doesn't justify of what he did. I am sorry that all this has taken place. I can't speak for my nephew at this point, because I don't know where his mind was set
right
on the day of this happening.
Mm-hmm.
I do know that he has been depressed for quite a bit of years, and we have tried to get him help.
Mm-hmm.
It has not helped. We have been thrown here and here and here with him. It's just not helped. At this point, the only thing that I'm really at this point is why the police treated us again as bad as they did standing in Eskenazi that night and wanting to, you know, using their force of saying how they'll lock everyone up if we didn't leave the hospital. That was, you know, it was really uncalled for.
Let me, Ms. Bowers, let me ask you, kind of break down what exactly happened at the hospital. So I understood, because I was reading things on Twitter that the family was at the hospital at the same time. Obviously, you know, law enforcement was at the hospital. Did they ask you to leave?
They asked us to leave. They didn't ask us to leave. They put Cynthia Davis in there, my sister-in-law, and brought her back out and told her exactly what to say to us. And she spoke and told us, they told me to come out here and tell you guys that he is on life support.
Mm-hmm.
He's out of surgery. He's, at this point, they want everyone to leave in an orderly fashion, or you will be locked up. Looked at her.
Okay. The lady that said that, she was a family member, or did she also work at the hospital?
No. Cynthia said that, mother of
okay.
the of my nephew.
Okay, I got it. I got it.
They had her to say that. There was no rowdiness. Everybody was like mourning the whole situation.
And so you all left. Did she leave as well? Did the mom leave as well? Or did they let her stay?
That I know of, we all had to leave. Everybody, all of us. Because we knew that we couldn't see him.
Right, okay.
I'm in nursing myself.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew that we couldn't see him, but I told them because I kind of know how it goes.
Were you all like you all in the police were in the same room, or were you all separated in different areas in the hospital?
We wasn't. We were on the third floor, the surgery floor, where we were asked to go.
Right. Okay.
And they just came out and stood there with force, about three or four cops.
Mm-hmm.
With a couple of doctors and stood there with her so she could say what they told her to say.
And no one from the hospital, I'm not talking about the doctors, no representative of the hospital came to talk to the family and said, look, there's a whole lot of police here. They're kind of upset for your own safety and protection. You know, we kind of need to get you here, maybe move you to a separate room to hang out or even have you go to the chapel.
No.
No.
Not at all.
Okay.
It was no. And it should have happened that way. She should have been pulled over and said, we need for just immediate family. Can you please ask for everyone else to leave? That's how it should have been. And it didn't.
Ms. Bowers, can you hang on? Because I need to at least play a commercial so I can pay my light bill here. Because I also want to ask about Major Tavis Jr. Because when I read his record, it looked to me like, you know, he had not gotten into any scrapes or arrests with law enforcement since August of 2010. That's almost 5 years in my book.
Exactly.
All right, so can you hold on for a few minutes?
Yes.
All right, please don't go away. We're talking with, never know who calls on this program because this is the talk show of record of our community, Marsha Bowers, who is the aunt of Major Davis. We're learning some things. This is what it's all about, getting your reaction and maybe learning some things as well. It's Afternoons with Amos after these. We're talking with Marsha Bowers. She is the aunt of Major Davis Jr., the accused assailant in the alleged murder of Officer Perry Wren on Saturday night at 34th and Forest Manor. Ms. Bowers, when I got a hold finally of the record of Major Davis, because again, the inference was this was a person that had done violent acts and was a felon, and discovered that, you know, everything he'd ever been charged with were nonviolent offenses, drug offenses, was convicted on a misdemeanor in 2008, had been arrested in an incident. He was a passenger in a car in 2010, and then nothing since then. Was he trying to turn things around in his life?
What I can say is he is a good father.
He's a father of three, correct?
Father of three.
Yeah, okay.
No, father of four.
Oh, I'm sorry. Father of four.
Love is a good brother, good son. Good nephew. He's not. Yes, he has been. He's. He was actually getting ready to get off into driving trucks. Actually, learning to. My husband was getting ready to study with him on CDL.
Mm-hmm.
So, just so he can get out of the environment that he was in. I just don't appreciate them mixing his criminal history with his father's. It's been a great mix up here.
The one suggestion I would give your family. If you have specific instances where specific news media mixed it up, then you all as a family or have a representative representing the family, could be an attorney, they need to get a hold of the news director. If it was one of the television stations, the news director and the general manager, and if it was the printed newspaper, get a hold of the editor. And you need to make that complaint known in writing. No joke. If those errors occurred. Okay?
Okay.
The other thing is, because there's some rumors in the community, and if you can't answer the question, I will understand. But what is the condition, the medical condition of Mr. Davis right now? I know he's in critical condition. Is he on life support? Is he conscious?
He is on life support.
Okay.
At this point.
Okay. Don't need to go any further. Like I said, somebody had called, and I just wanted, you know, if you could answer, just to at least let the community know what the situation is, and everything's in God's hands.
Everything is in God's hands.
Ms. Bowers, I appreciate, the opportunity for the family to at least have the community hear your side of it. The story that we played earlier that Channel 8 aired, what was the family's reaction to that? Because I gather Channel 8 got a lot of pushback from their viewers about it, and the pushback was so strong they had to say something about it on their website. That's real. When media does that, that means they're getting a lot of pushback, negative pushback from their viewers. What was the family's reaction to that report? Was it
–
did you all think it was fair?
I didn't see Channel 8.
Okay.
Air.
That was the audio before you guys called me. As you all were calling, that's what was on the radio.
Oh, okay. You mean of what I was listening to?
Yes, ma'am.
On your show?
Yes, ma'am.
The thing is with my family is the only big thing that we're so upset about at this point is all the negativity of making my nephew look like he was just this really bad person. And he wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he really wasn't.
Okay.
He wasn't like, he doesn't have this really long criminal history that everybody's saying. He didn't do, like, because I've heard too in some of the media that this is just, you know, an ongoing thing with him and all this. It's not true. So I'm thinking one of my other sisters talked to me last night, and, you know, she made a lot of sense that for us not to really even look at it anymore,
mm-hmm.
because all is, it makes us angry and bitter, and that's not what we should be doing right now. We're in prayer. We're trying to really figure out what's the next step.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to listen to what's going on with the cop's family, Officer Wren's family,
right.
was, you know, and we're trying to be civil here.
Okay.
It's too much negativity. It's always negativity around when something like this or, you know, just go on. Just don't listen to it. You know, just stay in prayer.
Yeah, and a lot of people are listening. They don't like, you know, what happened with your son and the officer, but I think, you know, they're also in keeping with the God we serve. Would be giving that good counsel. Ms. Bowers, Marsha Bowers, aunt of Major Davis Jr., thank you very, very much for getting through the lines. I think that was the good Lord, you know, opening a way on the telephone lines for the community to hear you. Thank you very, very much. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more, and there's ways you can get in touch with us. 239-1310, or you can send me a text message at 37890, keyword Amos, or you can send me an email at praiseindy.com. It's Afternoons with Amos, getting community reaction. We've talked a lot about what happened at 34th and Forest Manor, but I do want to touch on the situation in Broad Ripple. Because I'm not going to sit here and let these Broad Ripple nightclubs go back to all playing all country music night, because that's going backwards. It's Afternoons with Amos after these.